Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Alca with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson, and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webnode.com. A quick reminder, please rate, review, turn on your notifications, and subscribe. Thank you. Today we'll be discussing some of our very own Andy Lipson's activism work, union member related work. As most of our audience know, Andy is not only a longtime socialist, he is as well a high school teacher. You teach physics and chemistry, right?
Yeah.
A high school science teacher at Mission High School. Should we state that?
At Zoom University.
At Zoom University. Always being facetious. All right. So I guess where we can start with this is just trying to get some basics down. As I think you being in a union, Andy, there seems to be some terms that maybe we can get familiar with just so that we're able to follow through throughout this episode. I don't know, maybe we should start with Kenny on some of these questions because you shared with us a document and we will be discussing what you shared with us. Did you want to say anything before?
Yeah, I think I want to start off and then maybe Kenny could ask.
Yeah, actually go. Yeah, sorry.
So yeah, I mean, this is definitely an episode where I was like, hey, I want this episode to be about some of the stuff that's happening in our union. And what I mean by our union here is at the site at Mission High School, there is a union election taking place for the position of building representative at Mission High School and for the position of union building committee, which is a group of people there. And I want to mention that about a year ago, Eduardo and I had an episode, I think it was entitled What is to be Done at Mission High School, where I mentioned how there were two things that we wanted to accomplish. One is build a Marxist cell at our site, that meaning like a study group that would then maybe go on to bigger things potentially, and have a real election at our high school over the position of building representative. Didn't mention as much the UBC at the time. And those things definitely happened. Like, we have built the cell, and myself and Greg and another teacher have been doing a study group for a year, and we're going to continue it this year. That's very good. And we had real elections last year that me and Greg, we ran as building representatives on a kind of radical platform of challenging the principal. We ran as co-building reps, and then there were three people who ran as alternative building reps, like as a group of three, on the idea of cooperation and more like a more friendly relationship with administration. And they won 69% to 31%. And at the time, I thought that was a step forward. And I can genuinely say that really was a step forward. Because I think that election has led to our new election, which is happening this week. And we are now having genuine elections at our site, not for the union. We have 6,000 teachers and paraprofessionals and classified. I'm not talking about 6,000 teachers and 125 different school sites at San Francisco Unified. I'm not talking about that election. I'm talking about the election at a single site at a school with about 140 teachers and paraprofessionals electing one building representative and potentially electing a group of union activists or participators called the Union Building Committee. And the people put their names forward. I'm running for building rep, and there's somebody running opposite me. And there are about 15 people running for the UBC. And many people put statements forward about their vision of what they would do or about themselves. And I really think that's a big step forward for workers at our site. So that's the first thing I wanted to say.
I think I would like just to say something. It's not a question, it's just something why I think this is important for us to cover. Why sometimes people might feel as if there's a disconnect. Like, why is Andy sharing with us about his teacher work, his union work, his activism out there when it's we're dealing with other headline issues? It's related. So I want to just state a reason why. We did an episode, what, 2 years ago? It was on the general strike of Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I hope that we do more episodes, the three of us, where we if we don't have a topic to cover, that we look back at history and maybe we discuss some of our figures that we admire, such as you've mentioned Eugene Debs, Andy. We could discuss that another time. I'm just saying that it's cool to look at history from the past, because the general strike was one that we covered where we saw how solidarity strikes, where different people from different backgrounds and from different workforces were able to join together to be able to shut down a city. And what we distinguished very clearly in that episode, in our reflections after we discussed the history, was how unions could be used as a vehicle for revolutionary change, for revolutionary transformation. And if anyone is wondering what they can do, I mean, this is one area, right? The three of us work differently in different, you know, Kenny Cepeda, he has his organizing work with his community that he has shared with us, and that you shared with us. I have something on the side, but we look at now what you're doing as a model or as an example of maybe what someone else could think about or reflect on in their workforce if they're a part of a union, or even if teachers happen to be shared widely with this episode, because sometimes I know from having worked as a former union member in the school district, sometimes we get caught with just the small games that happen at a school site and don't see the larger picture of how this union can actually be used as a larger vehicle for something else outside of just our school site and dealing with whether someone received what do you call it now? And I'm forgetting all the terms now. When you get a slap on the wrist from a principal or something. I forget.
Oh, like a holding discipline. I can't remember.
Well,
anyhow. Reprimand.
Well, we look beyond that and we try to see it, how it connects to the real world. That's all I wanted to say. So folks can check out the episode if you want to add anything to that, either of you, that's cool. That's all.
And I'll just say that, you know, AJ, it was also a fellow teacher. We interviewed her here. And I sent her my statement for running for building representative and for running for UBC. And I think she encapsulated it best when she goes, now this is actually the most important election of our lifetime. And she's not joking. Like when she says that, like I get it's a little, but she's not joking when she says that. And I agree with the spirit of what she's saying. Far more important than Trump and Biden. Far more.
We say hi to you, AJ, and we hope to have you back.
What does a building rep do within the union? What does the UBC Union Building Committee do?
Right.
Just to kind of get a sense of the structure of the union.
So historically, the most important position has been seen as the building representative. And you can have a building representative that represents all the teachers, which are called certificated. And you can have a building representative which represents all the classified. And that person is sort of the lead person to oversee the thrust of union work at the site and the thrust of what the work will look like to defend workers, to defend the contract that defends workers, to push back against management, and to organize the site potentially for work actions if they're necessary within the site, but also if we're doing something as a union, United Educators of San Francisco, in conjunction with other districts. So think of the building representative as almost the president, and the UBC as sort of the cabinet. Now, that's only a partial, because most people think the president runs the thing and the cabinet is just there to support. And that's not the situation with the UBC. The UBC is a collection of people who operate as a kind of a as a place where the building representative has to bring those people together. They talk about what's taking place at the site. And generally, I think if it's really working well, they decide together pretty much as equals what the thrust will be. And they will debate things out. And if they can reach a consensus or can reach a pretty big agreement on a course of action, then it's not just the building representative trying to do something. It's the whole site. The way I thought to put it was, a good building representative can defend people. A good UBC can defend a whole site, because it organizes a collection of people much broader than just one individual. So that's why the UBC can't be a cabinet. It almost seems as just a supportive role. And I don't see the UBC as that. I see the UBC as sort of the tendrils of the union at the site, leading to other departments, leading to other sectors, organizing other people who are counselors or librarians or security or paraprofessionals or teachers in science department, math department, English department. How do you touch all those individuals? You would need a UBC to do that. One building representative can't do all that, particularly at a site like mine that has 140 union members at it. And that's not counting the SEIU members, the service employees, industrial union, who are cafeteria workers, people who clean the floors. What's that called?
Custodians,
and the
secretary
of staff. Yeah. So those are another union, but you want to, if you're going to deal with them, if you're going to involve them, you would want a broad UBC, a big UBC to do that. So I hope that makes sense.
How does the UBC or the union rep stay in touch with the rest of the body of the workers in the building?
That will depend on the character of the building rep that gets elected, and that depends on the character of the UBC that gets elected, the members of the UBC. I would say that if I was building representative, I would really say that we would report regularly out of our UBC meetings. We would have like weekly to biweekly UBC meetings where the building representative would meet, the UBC would meet, and then other members of our union at the site could come there as well. And we would report what we would do at the meeting, but we would also report what happened with our meetings with the principal. So we would do that regularly to just give people a sense of what's taking place.
And I'm curious as to what kind of mechanisms are there to basically hold these people accountable, these representatives of the workers, to kind of get a sense of how is this different in our political system?
These are important questions. And this is why I think it's so important we're having elections with people's names on them, people making statements. Some people didn't make statements because we didn't have that before. You have to understand, 3 years ago, before Greg was here, Greg was on the episode last year, we had elections, but no one was elected. It was like by acclamation. It was like the building representatives ran unopposed, and the UBC was just like, okay, everyone who wants to be on the UBC is on the UBC. So there was no accountability because there was no real election. There was an election, but there were no stakes in the election. So I was a building representative as this radical, but there were some people who agreed, but a lot of people didn't. And really, I didn't have any meaningfully authority, and nor should I have, because no one paid attention to the election. And secondly, the UBC really didn't function as a group of people who would support some initiatives and go with it. Anytime there was any pressure put on our UBC, I would resist that pressure, but the UBC would pretty much dissolve because people didn't sign on to that. They didn't want to like get any heat. And that's one of the reasons why I started to see the UBC as kind of like, geez, kind of pointless. So when Greg and I ran 2 years ago, we didn't even have a UBC. And then when we were pushed off and then a new group came forward, it became more clear to everyone else why we needed a UBC. And that this wasn't just good enough just to have a good building representative, no matter what they stood for. And so I think we've all learned a lot, including myself, about what the role of the UBC is. So I think this election actually begins to hold people accountable to doing something.
So you said things have started to change in terms of like the elections having a stake, right? Like people being more involved, paying attention. What do you think has changed what has made the UBC mean something?
I think it came from a few years back when Greg and I really pushed things forward and it pissed people off. I mean, some people were like, yeah, good, this is what you should do. But other people within our staff were like, you don't represent me when you do this. And they were right. Like there was no real election. Like I said, we were elected, but there was no real election. So we were like, look, if you don't like what we're doing, then run against us.
And participate.
Yeah. And that's what happened. They were like, okay, we'll run against you. And they did. And they beat us like 69% to 31%. We ran that was last year. This is if we go back to the last episode that I'm mentioning, the what is to be done at Mission High School. We ran on we are pushing back against the principal. We want to push for the district. We want a strike, da 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 da. And the other side was like, we're okay with a strike, but we want to work more with the principal. We don't think this idea of attacking our principal and things like that is the right way to go. And so they won. And I think some people were not happy with how that new set of building representatives represented them, because actually the principal was able to get away with a lot. And the building representatives, I think, covered for them in a lot of ways, covered for the management. But in all honesty, they did what they said they were going to do. So if members are unhappy with them, they have nobody to blame but themselves. Because I feel like that last group didn't lie to workers. They told them exactly what they were going to do. It's like, we're gonna work with management. Those fools, Andy and Greg, are going to like make trouble by fighting management all the time. So you should elect us. And they did. And so people got what they voted for.
You need to really help me here, Kenny, because I need you to bring us back if you feel there is some confusion, because the way that my mind is already going here, the way I look at this is from my experience having been a former UBC member as well, a UBC rep at a different site in the Mission, similar demographic population. Mm-hmm. And I as well know four of my former colleagues at Mission High School. So I have and I say that, why am I saying that? It's because, disclaimer for anyone that is going to watch this, especially folks that are going to be on this list of Mission High School, if they feel that you're giving any information, I just want to be sure that it's not you that I consulted or talked with. It's you know, I have also no other folks. So if this is public information, it's not for this episode to be what Andy's point of view is and all of a sudden sharing with us on the inside and trying to make it his way or no. So I want.
Wait a second. It is supposed to be my way, though. That's what's supposed to happen at the end of this. Sorry.
We can. So, I guess what I'm just trying to say, Andy, is that people who may encounter this video are probably going to feel, why are you sharing this? It's public information. That's my point in saying this. We don't have to, you know, so that's all the disclaimer I want to say. And secondly,
that's an important question. Do you want to go before I go?
No, go.
And look, the way I'm running as a socialist, I think is going to surprise some socialists because it's different than how many socialists would run. And I'm not saying it's the right way, but it's the way I'm choosing to do things right now. And I want to see what it produces because I used to do it differently and I'm not doing it that way. And so I am reaching out to fellow revolutionary union activists and saying, this is how I'm doing it. You can agree with it, you can disagree with it, but here's my reason. And you can decide whether you think this is the right thing or the wrong thing to be doing. And I'll report to you over time what it produces.
Now, the second thing I want to just give people, I know this, tell people is that I know this, how do you call it? It is like, the sentiment, the morale, the sort of stuff that goes on within a school where your colleagues check out but they get upset. I know this feeling because this happened at my own site where some of us in UBC would do something, but then people who didn't participate or sort of checked out or were too busy, as they would say, suddenly would become upset with us because they didn't ask for that, or why, and they started questioning, why are you speaking up for me? And you can see there in the teacher's office, their mailbox is full of stash of papers where if you read your mail, maybe you might check off where you agree or disagree, or maybe you might even read in the bulletin that you can run yourself. But, you know, it happens a lot. And I guess I'm not going to be nice about it. If you don't participate, if you don't have anything to contribute, this is just me saying, don't complain about it.
And I feel differently. I am glad, like, I get it that people check out, because I think we as activists, as union members, our union has encouraged people to check out. We as activists have sort of lied to people. Honestly, we've lied to people about why we're doing things and what we're trying to do. And I might not like that people suddenly come back when they weren't paying attention before and come at me or come at our UBC. I might not like how it feels, but I like that it's happening because it's engagement, and that's what we need. I'm not, if I say to you, wait, why weren't you reading that stuff before? What I'm really trying to say is, I told you I wanted your engagement, but now that you're giving me engagement, please stop giving me engagement. And that's wrong. I believe that's wrong. I need to accept the fact that finally the UBC or UB, the building representative, done something that's forced the engagement. And now I've got it. Now is our moment to organize. And that's how I look at it.
Might be a better person than I am. Because I would get so frustrated with my former colleagues. They would come up and say, why are they saying, what's going on with the group? And I'd be like, the UBC meeting is listed where you can see, you can go participate weekly. We post stuff in the email threads. If you're not reading those email threads, I don't know what to tell you. Join the monthly meeting with the principal where the UBC does discuss these things with the principal. I don't know what else to tell you. You happen to be so busy, but you don't, I mean, how else do we communicate this stuff? There are emails, there's stacks of paper in your mailbox that you keep filling in, that you have a bird's nest in there and you're not taking out the stuff from your mailbox.
I think we're moving afield from something, but I will say that I'm not saying I don't get frustrated, but I would say that if members heard that from me, then they can call me a fraud, because then I'm not blaming you, Eduardo. I'm saying from me, because I say I stand for something. I'm not saying you. But I say I stand for defending and representing and trying to get workers in action. So if they catch that from me about, hey, what about sudden this, then I think they're right to say, Libsyn, you're a fraud. So that's all I'm going to say. And so I try to do by my principles, not by my frustration, which I do feel.
Like I said, you must be a better person than me in that sense. Let's carry on.
Maybe to bring it back to our, you know, conversation. So you're running for building rep in a member of the UBC. Is that correct?
Yeah. And so I was nominated for both. And I will tell you this. People know that I've mentioned Darylin before as an ally, and obviously Greg. And there was another person. And I said, you all can't nominate me. I'm not running if you all nominate me. So that means that somebody who is not somebody I know directly who is going to try to push something nominated me for building representative, and somebody else I don't know. Well, I actually nominated myself for UBCs because that I wanted. I'm not saying I didn't want building representative, but I definitely wanted to make sure I was on UBC. But I wasn't going to run for building representative unless somebody who I didn't know nominated me.
All right. So can we maybe get to the statements that you...
Let's get to it.
This was my... Yeah, statement for the building representative. And they asked, there were two building representatives nominated, and they asked us to make a 150-word statement. And I think this statement actually is exactly 150 words. It says, anti-racism separated from the fight for workers' power and socialist revolution are at best hollow words and often an opportunistic cudgel wielded against workers by both politicians and management. Our collective fight against oppression and exploitation is rooted in the idea that an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us, be it immigrant, prisoner, child, or worker. The source of our power is in the potential to control our workplace through collective action or inaction until our demands are met. A workplace rife with political differences, favoritism, and fear made this a tall order while we were in the building. Collective action has become significantly harder under distance learning. As building representative, I pledge to join you in making Mission High School a place committed to defending every one of us. If we are willing, perhaps we can make history rather than just teach about it.
So what are you trying to achieve with your statement? Like, what is your, you know, your basic goal, I guess?
There's a few threads here. First off, I wanted to make an open statement to our staff, shedding light to the things that are really going on in our school. The use of the term anti-racist, being an anti-racist teacher or anti-racist education, I think has become a buzzword. I am against racism, but I'm against racism because I'm against capitalism and I'm for workers' power. And I think the words of anti-racism within our profession have been turned into something that's kind of meaningless and hollow. Like I said, hollow. And I want to call that out publicly. I'm not saying people agree with me, but I know there are people who do believe that, and they're afraid to say it because they think they'll be called racist. And they might be called racist. And I may be called racist for saying this, but I felt like it was necessary. Secondly, I wanted to call out the two things that are going on within our site. Yes, there's political differences among all of us as workers, but there are two types of things management is using to control. One is creating a web of favoritism so that they create a coterie of teachers who get what they want. And for that reason, they'll support management more likely because things are going pretty well for them. And then there's another set of people who definitely feel the whip and the lash of management and feel much more afraid to speak their mind. And those are the two things kind of going on that I don't think people want to give voice to. So I wanted to give voice to that. So those were the things that we're feeling in the site, just to get it out and say, hey, we can talk about this, all right? But obviously the other thing is I wanted people to understand that my reason for doing this is not because I want a better contract. It's not because I want us to just fight for stopping police brutality or fight for fully funded public education. I want people to understand that what we're doing is connected to the possibility of the transformation of society through the actions of workers. And so that's where I want to talk about workers, that all these things, anti-racism and the fight against racism, have to be connected to socialist revolution and workers' control. And secondly, I wanted to kind of give voice to this notion of solidarity has become kind of meaningless. People think it's like, well, I believe in the struggle of immigrants, so my belief in it represents solidarity. And that's not solidarity. You cannot offer solidarity unless you fight. You fight with people together, like in action. And if you don't fight to defend yourself, then you have nothing to offer other workers. So I wanted to get at this notion that the fight against racism is not an identity fight, it's a working class fight. It's a fight rooted in the notion that an injury to one is an injury to all. And so whenever there's a worker who's injured and that happens, that isn't just an injury to them, that's an injury to all of us if we don't do something to defend them. And that is a sentiment that is going to have to be built within the class. We have a long way to go. Like I said, or like Eduardo said, we have not struck as a union in 41 years. That means we haven't fought for anything in 41 years. That means we have no solidarity to offer anyone, because the only true solidarity we could offer anyone in struggle is to say, we will shut down the schools unless that person is made whole or that situation is made right. That's it. That's all we have to offer. It's not about a vote. It's not about, or at least an election vote like Biden and Trump. What we have to offer is our control of our work and the threat of the control of our work to the capitalists, unless they meet our demands for us or for somebody else. And I wanted that to be represented in the statement.
May I ask, you said that you've changed your approach. How is this different than what you've done before?
Before, this approach, what I'm taking is closer to what we did last year with Greg, where we laid out that we were revolutionaries and socialists. I think this is even more spelled out. But I think the approach I took before was, okay, people know I'm a socialist, but I'm not going to emphasize that as much because people aren't necessarily ready to hear that. So I'm going to speak more to your immediate demands. Try to guess where you're at and speak more to being just to the left of that and try to draw you to me like a, I'm going to try to manipulate you. I'm going to try to guide you to me by breadcrumbs of positions. And I'm done doing that. What left has been a piece of making that happen. More thinking about theory and history has changed my mind about that. And I've just decided that, and it's not, I think there's something to be done here for revolutionaries to just say, look, we're for revolution and I'm for revolution and vote for me. You might not be in for revolution, but if you're with me, you got to know that that's what I'm for. And I'm going to hopefully win you, but not win you by duplicity or win you by slowly wooing you. I'm going to tell you right now what you don't want to hear. And then maybe in 2 years, you might agree with me. And you'll know that I was honest with you then, and I'm honest with you now. And I think revolutionaries, they don't necessarily think of it this way, but I think we've learned to be duplicitous. We've learned to hide our full set of politics, thinking we're transforming other people. But in reality, what it's done is it's transformed the revolutionaries and made them cautious about talking about their politics. And after a while, they stopped talking even about their core politics. And before you know it, no one's talking about revolution. Everyone's talking about Bernie Sanders. And so I'm taking a different approach, and I'm going to see what it leads to. It could be a complete failure, but I'm going to try.
Kenny, did you have another question before I ask?
I mean, do you want to have a follow-up for this? Because I'm just curious as to, like, what is your opponent? Like, I don't know if we can name him, but what is the other person offering, you know, and what is your hope? Like, what would be something, what would be success for you in this, you know, even if it means not winning?
Well, the person who's running has been a teacher, a longtime teacher, just who's also running as building representative, has been a longtime teacher as well. And frankly, we've agreed, that person and I have agreed on a lot of things, particularly our criticisms of our union, like UESF, not going on strike, not doing anything. We've agreed on a lot of that. I think the area where that person and I don't agree is, again, this question of our posture in relationship to management, the principal and administration at the site. And I think that person takes the position, I think, and they do it in their statement much more like, I want to work with management, and I think we'll be more effective if we do work with management. Personally, I think we saw how that worked, and I think they're just trying to say the same thing again. But at the same time, I think he's a respected member of our community, and I honestly think I think he's going to win. And I predicted either a 75% to 25%, even 80%, 20%. So that's my prediction, because I just think I'm putting out the glass of water I'm putting to my staff is not in any way, or it's concentrated, you know, like it's revolution concentrate that I'm forcing people to drink and say, look, this is what we need to do. Drink it. Let's go. And Brandy I was talking to Brandy about this, and she goes, look, if there's a union activist who's not a socialist, not a revolutionary, but wants to do something, your statement might push them away. And I was like, you're right. It might. And I think it's necessary, though, for me to stand on what I believe we need to do. What is the task immediately in front of us? And I think that task only gets clarified in the immediate future unless somebody has to stand for it right now for it to be clarified today or in the near future. Otherwise, things always just get more and more unclear about what we should do. And this is why we keep running into the Democratic Party and being fooled by them over and over again.
I suspect that, again, from my background and having been also a former UBC member, that sometimes teachers limit themselves just to their school site and don't see the union as something greater beyond SFUSD or any union. They don't, the the politics are always inwards, and they just put out statements in support of some candidates with the larger apparatus that, like the NEA and other institutions. But I think that the other person running is maybe thinking about just the politics within the community, and not maybe the politics in solidarity with other workers. That's my suspicion, at least from what I feel from the statement, and having worked also for the SFUSD. And there's an issue with that, I think, here's my follow-up with the question, where administration isn't seen as something in the hierarchical ladder, as part of a larger system to control workers, and instead given sort of a face of more familiar, more of a personable face. No, what would you say to your colleagues, or even to fellow teachers out there in any district, what administration's role is in an institution, in a school?
Yeah. We've had, in the time that I've been here, we've had three principals. All of them, in my mind, are competent principals. And all of them, I think, came from teacher background, and were teachers before, and were competent teachers, particularly our current one, who was like an excellent English teacher. But I believe once you enter management, you are no longer a worker. This is a loaded term. You essentially become an enforcer for the district, for SFUSD, who themselves has to answer to a mayor and to Sacramento, who themselves have to answer to a set of politicians, who themselves have to answer to the capitalists in California, who themselves then have to answer to a set of capitalists nationally in the United States. So you are essentially the frontline worker for the capitalist class, if you will, like of managing the working class to keep them down. And that's what management is. And management is like that at McDonald's, management is like that at Amazon, and management is like that in a school. And there's a way that I think teachers start to think as managers as we manage our students. And that's not a different thing. In some ways, it raises questions for me about how much head fixing has gone on to teachers as workers as we sit there and manage students, so that we start to get used to the idea of the way the system works, and our job is to sell the system to people. But I don't want to get too far afield. We are workers as teachers, and principals and administration are management, and their job is to tell us what to do. They have the power to hire or fire us, and they have the authority to discipline us, depending on whether we obey what they say goes. And if we didn't have a contract, they could can us anytime we want. If we didn't have a union that could defend that contract, they could do a lot of bad things to us. And so this is somewhat hidden in our school because we have a union, because we have a contract, but that's the relationship. I want to say there's one more complicating factor is previously our previous principals were male and white. And our current principal is a person of color, female. And I do believe that the notion of some of us opposing that person is often seen through the lens of racism, and instead of like our opposition to management is sometimes seen as racist, as we're not willing to listen to a person of color give us orders. And that's not where I'm coming from, but that is how these things are cast when people push back. And this is where I mentioned that anti-racism has been a cudgel used against workers. And it's happened at our site. And I know it's happened at other places as well.
Yeah, I think it's difficult for people to get sort of away from that way of thinking. And yes, the race card is often used when you have, we at our former site, also similar population, we looked for a Latina person to be administrator. And we found out through the hard way that whatever color, skin tone, whatever background, management, I mean, if it wasn't because this person came from a background in an auditing in the district, in the offices, more so than having taught, yes, some teaching experience, but then we wouldn't have seen the blatant micromanaging that existed there for us. So I just thought for your colleagues, whoever is going to listen to this, why you think it's important that this collaboration that people are asking for, this request for more collaboration and more dialogue with administration, in your eyes, isn't actually something that you are for because of the things that you laid out for.
I think if the way it would work is we would be strong within ourselves as workers, and we can let management come to us and ask us for stuff instead of us asking them. And ultimately, revolution means pushing them aside and saying, look, we're going to run this show. And it doesn't just mean pushing aside management. We got to push aside a lot more the people behind management. But that is the idea. The idea is as workers, we should not, I want us to stop looking from essentially our opponents for directions on how to go, because they'll never give us a good direction to go. It's going to be confusing enough for us to figure it out without trying to take that direction from management and the people who are in the ear of our managers.
And I'm curious.
That's just what it means to be independent, working class independence.
So what do you say to someone who just wants to get by, you know, and just like teach and not get involved in politics? As you know, some people put it, like a, you know, a fellow teacher.
I'd say do that, you know, good luck. Because Eric Schmidt is making moves. Bill Gates are making moves. Donald Trump is making moves. Joe Biden is making moves. The ruling class is making moves. We can sit there and do nothing. We can sit there and say and hope that it runs around us. And for maybe for some of us, it might, but it ain't going to work. But in the long run, things are going to get a lot worse for people at the bottom. And then as you move up from that scale, like the poorest of workers are going to feel it even worse. Things are just going to get worse ultimately for most every one of us, in terms of our workplace, in terms of the world, in terms of the environment, in terms of equity and equality, in terms of racism, in terms of sexism. The divides are going to get worse because the divides are being used by, the divides are already, that's what distance learning is partially about. It's about making those divides in our society even worse, making us even more separated so they can exploit us and oppress us even more. So they're free to, workers are free to do that. We've been doing that, frankly, for generations, and it has produced a desert here. We're getting erased and we're getting eradicated as a class, and our situation is getting worse and worse and worse. So that attitude will continue to produce more of the same and more rapidly, because I do think these crises are getting worse and worse and worse each time. So good luck with that. That's what I'd say.
You, as a union building rep, there's only one union building rep, right?
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I was hoping there would be a person running as one building representative for certificated, that's like teachers and counselors. And I was hoping somebody would run as a building rep for classified.
Because is there a position available for that?
A position is available for that, but I don't think anyone ran. And that actually is not good, because our most vulnerable workers and the ones who management treats the worst, and we as fellow workers often treat the worst, is that classified? And I still believe that a union is as strong as the experience of its most vulnerable member. It's not as strong as the people who get all the good stuff. And unless we get real representation for those folks, I think it's going to be a tough road for the classified. And if it's a tough road for the classified, it's a tough road for all of us.
I do have one more question. So You know, I know a group of teachers in the district, and I often hear that it's not that bad for us. You have it worse, basically. Like, what do you respond to? Because I not only hear that in the teacher's industry, I hear it in other industry. You know, I don't have it that bad. It could be worse, basically.
It's true. It's not as bad as it is for other people. I agree with them. But the question is what, like, where are things headed? Are things going to stay like this for you? Are things going to stay like that for your students? Are things going to stay like that for your children? I make $93,000 a year. That's not bad. All right. I think that's what it is. $93,000 a year. I don't think that's going to go away next year or 2 years. I may carry on that way if I can keep my job. Now, inflation might just make that amount less, you know, or things like that. But I can possibly get by with that. And that might be the situation for some teachers and maybe many teachers. But if you're, then please don't pretend to teach social justice in your class and teach kids about how we change the world and say that. And this is one of the reasons I said that final line is, unfortunately, teachers will do two pretendings. They'll pretend that they're making change by teaching kids about struggle, but not engaging in the struggle themselves. And then they'll say, well, things aren't so bad for me. They give themselves two outs to not do anything. And I think we carry on with that at the risk of ourselves, of fellow workers. What's happening to Black people in prisons and in this world, what's happening to immigrants, if we don't put up a fight, we can't defend anyone. So we need to learn how to fight. And so unless we wage that fight and learn to fight and learn to lose even a fight, but let's put up a fight collectively, then we have nothing to offer anyone, immigrant, prisoner, Black person in Bayview or whatever. We have nothing to offer you at all other than, I agree in sentiment with that you should not be beat up by cops. Well, what are you going to do when that happens? We shut down our damn school. That's what we'll do. And we're going to get everyone else to do it. And we're going to do that and try to spread that until the police force is eradicated. And we make our own police force. And we police ourselves with workers running the goddamn the show, like you mentioned in Seattle. And we'll feed ourselves. So that's what we're going to, that's where we need to go. And we need to have that sort of, we're not going to get there with people saying, things are fine. But honestly, that same person is probably saying they're going to vote for Joe Biden because this is the most important election of our lifetime. So it doesn't add up. Like, how can things be so dire when it, and vote for Biden? And yet we're not going to, like, no, it doesn't work. The fact is things are dire. And the only thing we can do about it is organize with our fellow workers. And if we try to organize with capitalists, we screw ourselves.
And maybe seems like we're going to carry on to UBC, but one more thing is you're in your statement, you said that anti-racism separated from the fight for workers' power and socialist revolution are at best hollow words and often an opportunistic cudgel wielded against workers by both politicians and management. Do you understand the possible backlash?
I do believe that people will say that I'm discounting, as a white male, I have the privilege to say such a thing, white privilege to say such a thing. And it's easy for me to say somehow. And that I'm dismissing the fight against racism, and I'm not. But I do understand that puts me in the line of fire of people who I think probably share more identity politics, more in alignment with identity politics and socialist politics. But that discussion is going to have to be waged within the class because there's an immense amount of confusion about how do we truly fight racism and sexism and how do we end oppression. And I think the notion of any sort of identity notion of doing that fight is not only misguided, it's going to hurt our class if we go down that road. And so I'm putting forward a different way of thinking about the fight against oppression as a collective working class fight that's not about just workers defending themselves, but it's about workers organizing themselves together, breaking through those barriers so they can control society and run it in their own wishes and aims, through their own wishes and aims collectively. That's socialist revolution.
I mean, I think this is especially true from the last sort of polemica,
yeah,
that you had, or that was folks got engaged. What was it last year?
Yeah,
at your school site, where what led was these elections, and then eventually you didn't represent them anymore.
Right.
Is so, and some of, because I know someone that was strongly I know this person very closely, that was sort of involved in the importance, the contribution that was involved in this discussion and was highlighting the need to really understand people from their backgrounds and points of views because of the identity that they each hold.
Yeah.
And some might even think that if putting a statement like this, as if that previous discussion that was had involving you and Greg might not have come, there's no fruition from those discussions, given that you have placed these words almost back again in your statement.
Yeah, the debates over who's a racist and who's not, and what does anti-racism mean? We touched on them at the end, like the end of the year, or the end of the year last time, just before we were displaced. Those came up. Those haven't been resolved. There still isn't agreement around it. And so, yeah, I'm putting out again that this is where I stand in relationship to these ideas. And I do welcome us disagreeing, and that's where the UBC comes in, because a building representative can only put forward their ideas, and we see whether the staff goes for that or not. But ultimately, it's the UBC and the coming together of that entire group that reflects the possibility of identifying what are the values and the political values around which a collection of workers can fight. Because I don't decide those things, and no individual socialist decides those things.
I hope that people visit our other episode on identity politics,
yeah,
for folks if they would like for us to get to a more fuller response to the identity politics discussion that is happening. And maybe we might even do another one again with Kenny. It might be necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready for UBC.
Okay.
Kenny, are you too? Yeah.
So there were 15 people who put their name forward for UBC out of a site of 140. That's good. Most of the people wrote their own statements. Some people didn't write any statements. And this was mine. I wrote, a strong UBC is a large UBC and the result of a large vote. A strong UBC involves the active participation of different political outlooks, job descriptions, races and genders, and work experience. A strong UBC is transparent and reports openly on its meetings with management. A strong UBC supports all its members, both classified and certificated. A strong UBC meets regularly, weekly or biweekly, and allows open debate for all workers who participate. Strong UBC has the courage to act when there is unity and to expose its political divisions to its fellow workers when there are differences. Strong UBC holds both management and the building representative accountable to our fellow workers. A strong UBC forges links of communication with other workers, both unionized and non-unionized. Vote for as large a UBC as possible. Vote for every UBC nominee on this ballot.
So, question. So every nominee can be elected? Is that a possibility?
It is a possibility. This was a very well done election, I believe, because we haven't done this before, but there was actually a pre-election before this election where we voted on the structure of our union. We basically were given two possibilities. Do you want like multiple UBCs, Andy and Greg, or the group of three who ran last year, as the building representatives and no UBC? Or do you want one UBC member, which is historically how it's a building representative, with a UBC behind them or with them in that election? And I think the vote was like 56% to 44% for one building representative and a UBC. And so when that happened, then there came the next question. So people were voting for UBC. How many people can be on the UBC? And there are some people who feel like it should be as low as 7, which is the number of people who can meet with the principal. Some people who feel like it should be as low as 10, which is the number of delegates you get to represent you at the UESF assembly when you go to the larger union meetings. And then there's some people who say there should be no limit to who's on the UBC. Doesn't necessarily have to be a limit. So one of the things we're voting on the ballot is 7, like the number of people who would be in the seat. Some people could vote for 7, some could for 10, and some are saying for 15, which means your vote, everyone here can go on it as, you know, if they want to be on the UBC. And that would be I'm in favor of that outcome.
Who proposed this structure, you know, since there was no UBC, right?
Yeah, that was really, I think it was pushed by our staff representative through our union, who knew that there were some problems with how we had done it. Frankly, this is a door that I really had opened by not really having a UBC election or not even insisting on it 2 years ago. And then it came to fruition last year that it really exposed itself as an issue. And so I know our union staff representative wanted this to be clarified, so said that we needed a structural vote. And I think there are people inside of our union who wanted that. And in fact, I think people on the election committee wanted that, because you have an election committee that cannot be on any part of the ballot. I think those people wanted some clarity as well. So I do think overall, this was something that many people were asking for.
How does this this second statement relate to the notion of working class democracy?
I think what I was hoping to do in the second statement, because you'll notice I didn't really say like vote for me or per se, what I was trying to do with it was to talk about what a UBC could be and how I kind of see it as really the engine of what could really be power at our site. If it could be big enough, it could be diverse enough and broad enough, and that it's actually a place to have out those political differences that we definitely have at our site, and to have all those different political opinions there. Like, so there are people who are running for UBC that people probably know that I'm like, oh, I don't agree with the way that person is doing things. And they definitely don't agree with the way I'm doing things. I feel it's very necessary for all of us to be present on that body and more, so that we can find where we do agree and then identify clearly the lines of disagreement. And then we as workers can learn, okay, who's right, who's wrong, through experience together. It's that kind of democracy that I think is one of the ways we will learn. You don't learn unless we engage in struggle, but we can learn about what ideas work and what ideas don't work by bringing those ideas to light and seeing what those ideas produce.
I'm curious as to, you know, obviously this learning, this shaping of the organization, the movement, how do you protect it, you know, because it's still in their attack, you know, how do you, you know, protect the learning process, the growth, the growing pains?
I don't think we can. Like, all I can do is, here's what I feel like I've learned, because I believe we have a better election this year than we did last year. And we are making some progress on our Marxist study group and stuff like that. And I at least I'll say my contribution to that was me being me. That's it. That's all I can do. Me be me and let other people be them. And we're going to meet somewhere. But I'm done sugarcoating things. I'm done trying to like hide people from the worst aspects of things so that maybe you'll feel like you can join in this. I'm going to basically say, look, we're in a dogfight. You're going to get bit. You're probably going to bleed, but we need to start. And so that's it. That's all I have to offer. And politics that I think do articulate the actual situation that is going on in the world for humans. That is socialist politics that articulate there's a capitalist class and there's a working class, and the working class is the larger group. We're the ones who do the work, and we are the ones who are getting exploited and oppressed. And if we come together collectively, we could knock those fools out of the park and we could have a different world.
It's interesting. I know, like I said, some of those teachers, and they fight for social justice, but at the same time, and for defunding the police, as well as against police brutality, as well as in solidarity for immigrants, in solidarity for the workers. But there is a disconnect that somehow, largely, most of them really are going to vote for Joe Biden. Again, that's a big, big presumption, but yeah. I feel confident saying that. Yep. I mean, if anyone is going to listen to this, I hope they can tell me, they can email me and say, I'm not voting, but I'm going to be very far people, and far few in between, who are not going to say they're not going to vote for Joe Biden. And they speak about capitalism in a theoretical way, a sort of Marxist ideology in a way that is flowery and talked about in the classroom, and sort of giving the encouragement of fighting back against the system or the man, as it used to be known in the 60s, or just it's interesting, but I don't think that many of them would be willing to go on a strike right now, or I don't think many of them see their union as something for the potential of a solidarity strike with other unions. And so I'm just getting present to that.
First off, and this comes back to say, like, I think they do have a different idea about how change is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think they probably do have a different idea about what the level of change we're going to need to make is. I tend to believe they're as sincere as I am. They just disagree. And I think the biggest thing, I don't think they believe the working class is a revolutionary class. I think they fundamentally don't think that the working class as a class is a revolutionary class capable of transforming society in its own name, for its own interests, completely independent from the capitalist class, and that doing so and establishing its own dictatorship is the best thing that could possibly happen to all of us. I don't think they believe that. But I think they are opposed to capitalism. I think they do support struggle. I think they do support unions. But I'm not really for unions. I'm for workers, and I'm for the working class organizing. And unions can be a bit of a vehicle, but I don't know. Our own union is going to interfere with all sorts of struggle if we get started. Let's be clear. Our own union leadership, at least. And so I know that, Eduardo, when you say union, you mean union of workers. I think people who don't agree with me are being sincere, and I think that's why we have to have some of these discussions out as we move forward. There were workers last year who really agreed with the collaborate with the principal, and who found out through experience, OMG, that does not work. Like, anytime you try to collaborate, that just means you give the principal a hammer to smash you with. And they didn't know that that was the case. I knew that was the case, but they didn't know that was the case. And I think they learned a lesson. Not all of them, but there were some who were like, okay, this, we've got to do it differently. So I think we can learn more lessons now.
Yeah. And I think most admin are used to that kind of power.
Yeah.
Most of them are.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, maybe it's clear you stated this, but in the past you said that the struggle itself, what we learn in the struggle, is as important or more important than the end, I guess, the outcome. And so is that how you measure, success of, what's happening in your union? I'm just curious.
Yeah. That will be one measure of a new level of success, which is that we actually get to a point where Mission High School is playing a role in organizing and leading struggle of ourselves and then maybe other sites as well. Okay, that will be, we're not there. And I would indicate some success, particularly if it was in relationship to some of these debates and things like that. But we're not there. At this point, I'm measuring success from, like, could we have real elections? And now we had a real election last year, and I feel like we're having even a more legitimate and broader election this year. That's how I'm measuring the success at this point. That is not struggle, but that is some structures taking place within our union that might indicate we might get there later, or maybe this year. But so it's weak tea, but it's what I can hold on to as a kind of step forward. But the reality is distance learning has not just separated us more. It's made it harder for even me to visualize how we could struggle together to actually put pressure on the capitalists and our bosses. I'm struggling right now, and this is maybe another, I talked to Eduardo about this, I think this is another episode I might want to do, is it's like, I'm not sure a strike will work right now.
You think that goes to another colleague of yours that a different site who is a socialist as well, who says something similar,
that
the times don't seem to be good enough right now for a strike.
I just think the conditions of us teaching from home and just doing it through logged on just make us very vulnerable. It makes it hard for me to see how do we put pressure on our opponents, and it makes it easy for me to see how they put pressure on us.
You've also said in the past that, you know, or at least I think it's you, maybe someone else, but that fight back doesn't usually happen when things are bad. Is this impreparation? I mean, do you still think that, or is this?
That was a quote that I know from Trotsky, who talked about mm-hmm. how things kind of take place in the rise up. Like, they don't take place in the beginning of the crisis. They take place as you kind of come out of the crisis, and people sort of like, wait, things are coming back. Why am I not? I got screwed 3 years ago. Why am I not getting something? Trotsky kind of said that, and that made some sense to me. That's not really a featuring into my thoughts one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I don't know what it's going to take, but like I said, I'm just doing me. I'm just doing what I think is right. And I'm just trying to say what I believe and see who also agrees with me, and to see if I can organize with them in a more directed and socialist revolutionary way. And then to the extent that my colleagues don't agree with me, I want to see what kind of discussions it can produce.
So we've had one of your fellow colleagues / comrade co-workers from your site on here, Greg, and he is also running for UBC. So Greg wrote in his statement, which I thought was different but also some aligned with what also you both really would like to see in your union to do, 41 years. It's been 41 years since UESF has gone on strike. We're stuck with the same service model union, losing battle after battle to the forces of austerity and privatization. If we are to arrest this slide, defend public education, and push back against austerity, we must begin by organizing within our building and increasing worker power here at Mission. We can lead by example, showing SFUSD what a fully empowered organized school community can accomplish. Join with me in developing a fighting, winning UBC here at Mission. Together, we will transform our school, UESF as a whole, and eventually the world. To be truly anti-racist educators, we must also be anti-imperialist and anti-capitalist, attacking the roots of these issues facing our communities. This will require the same hard work, dedication, and self-criticism we already bring to our craft. Si se puede. The people united can never be defeated.
So I like that you read that statement. I'm curious what you all would make of that first, and then I'd like to say something about it.
Right off the bat, I think what you talk about, your principles and where you're standing, and being clear and transparent where, what lens you're coming from and how you're going to fight at this. You were talking about this is the glass of water or something. You said an analogy like that, mm-hmm. that you're going to have to drink from. Mm-hmm. I think Greg is very compliments where he's like, look, we haven't actually been in a fight for a very long time for workers' rights or the stuff that we really say we're for, because, and he says, similar to what you said here, that to be anti-racist educators, if we're truly going to be anti-racist educators, we must also be anti-imperialist and anti-capitalist. There's just no way to separate those, divorce those. And I think that showing how this union demonstrated, trying to out, lay out is the word, trying to lay out what this union actually can do to do during these difficult times, in the midst of Black Lives Matter and, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans and police brutality and all of the stuff that has happened in 2020. This is what we should do in order to push back against those austerity measures, against all of the work we really say we should defend. And he says it, he lays it out quite well. And I thought that it complements yours. And seeing SFUSD, UESF as a vehicle to achieve some of those goals that both of you have.
Yeah, the way I see him as different. Yeah, of course there are similarities, but you know, Greg is a little more inspirational in, you know, like a little look into the future. Whereas I think your statement is more focused on the building blocks, I guess, of how do we build this? How do we prepare for the fight? You know, or at least like that learning process. So I mean, not passing judgment on one or the other. I just, that's how I see the basic differences. I think it's important, yeah, to keep a perspective of the future, but like you said earlier, you know, it's a dogfight and you have to be ready for that dogfight. You have to learn how to fight. You have to learn how to win and lose, and you have to learn how to learn along in the fight, versus, you know, I feel like I think that's a mistake that we often make, that looking forward, we will stumble and then be surprised because we stumbled. Can I
add something to, I thought there were two things he also, what I really liked, I forgot to add, is that he said this word stuck. Look, we've been at it for a long time this way with this service model, and we're stuck in same old, same old. And where he then says we can lead by example is saying this school, we can actually be what we say we can be, like not just the politics within our community, but really lead by example that we can carry it. We can carry this weight on our shoulders to take charge and other people will follow suit possibly, but we can start that. And that's where I those two, where he says we can lead by and we are stuck with the same, is where I think he might or may not actually inspire no one, because people don't want to lead by example. They're like, this is way beyond what I signed up for.
I think that's what I think he poses. He poses a choice, you know, like you should, you know, like join this. And I think that's just like a little more on the moral, you know, imperative realm versus, if you really want to change the world, you know, you really kind of don't have a choice. You know, you have to fight back, and, you know, you can pretend you're fighting. I don't know. I just think that, it's a little bit more of a choice in the way I read it.
And to do that, I think what's going to take is what you outlined and laid out in your own statement, which is to meet regularly. You have to. I don't know how you can organize if you don't meet regularly. And you said weekly or biweekly, and to include both classified and certified staff, which I don't remember if any of the other statements said that. But yeah, I think that it has to be a collective action, and that means also seeing your fellow para as part of you.
And I do see, though, that both you and Greg stand out for me, you know, immensely from the rest of the statements, you know, the other 15. That the other ones leave even more in the realm of, you know, the, you know, this is what we have, you know, and it's not even talking about fighting back. It's just about conversations and keep the conversations going and collaborate with, I guess, management.
Yeah. Well, Eduardo, you might know, there's a little childhood song. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things doesn't belong. Have you heard of that one?
I think so.
Yeah. It's a song that I remember, and it is one of those things where you'd see what everything else is and you'd see that one thing that stick out and you say, oh, that thing doesn't belong. And I do believe that both Greg and I do sort of stick out in that regard. I do think we belong, but I think that's what I'm proud about, what he wrote and what I wrote. And I made sure, and he both agreed, Greg, whatever you write, I don't want to see until after you've submitted it. And then whatever I write, I don't want to see until I've submitted it, because I want to see what we're thinking. So we wrote what we wrote without really much consultation, other than, you know, we talk regularly about stuff. And I do agree with what you said, Kenny, is that I think he is aspirational, and that's kind of how he is. And you can hear kind of the bitterness in mine, and that's how I am. I mean, it's kind of where we come from, and it's been a long road for me, and I'm bitter. And he's kind of starting, and he's hopeful, and I think that's good. That's why we need us all. That's why we need new teachers, old teachers, da 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 da. But I also agree. I mean, I think you would agree with this, Kenny. I do think it was key what he wrote, and for me, it's very concrete what he writes about. If we're going to take action, we as a school have to take responsibility for the possibility of that happening by us taking it on our shoulders to start action here. If we can turn a small wheel as a school, maybe we can turn other wheels of other schools into motion. And that is how struggle has taken place when it's gone on in Oakland, when it's gone, when you look at it with the waves, strike waves on the red wave, it's been small districts starting other districts moving. And so I think he's laying out in a different way, a very concrete vision of how we as a smaller group can start transformations, larger transformations. It is also possible if we start to fight that we get pounded down by the capitalists. That's possible, but we won't know unless we start. And we won't have any hope of building a larger fight unless we try to make it start here. And so I really appreciated what he wrote around that. And I was really like, yeah, this is good. But I'm glad you brought up Eduardo, because I think his statement is compliments and goes along with what we're thinking. I'm glad I got a chance to hear how both of you look at it.
I'm trying not to be too critical of the other statements, because I think they're not here to defend themselves.
Yeah.
But I'll just say that I saw, again, some of the same friendly administrator, collaborative strategy, desire, and rhetoric coming from others. And there's other things I could say, but I'll just stick to that one piece where I think my only, from having worked at SFUSD, all I can say is you have to look out for your colleagues first. But I really just going to stress that. I'm not trying to make anyone feel like I'm being critical of, you know, again, you're not here to defend yourself, but if they happen to stumble upon this, I really want to emphasize that one thing we learned at my site and my school site is you have to look out for your colleagues first. You just have to look out for your colleagues first. Your coworkers, as much as you may disagree or may have quirks, or some of them just sort of check out, you know, and have, as I said earlier, bird's nest in their mailbox, or they're funny and some of them just don't want to be involved in politics. You have to look out for your colleagues first. And I'll say I'm just a concerned. I'll just use that word. I'm concerned that anybody is going to think that the administrators are going to have your back. I've seen some very shady things from administrators. Very friendly, also former teachers that used to work with us and then became administrators. You can be friendly. It's not like you have to be hostile with it. You can obviously say hi, hello, you know, but in the end, you have to have in the back of your head, remember, they're not part of your union. They have a whole separate administrator meetings where they have other issues and they're fed into. There is a difference. And when I'll use that phrase that I hear of, push comes to shove, they will do something shady. And sometimes without an explanation, they can even sometimes remove you or give you a really bad mark. I forget what's it called, Andy. What's it? It's what's that when they teach, when administrators do something to teachers, where they?
Well, there's I think the biggest one I know is reprimand or.
No, it's a. Maybe I'll put it in. If anyone is listening to this on the podcast, I'll have it. I'll look it up. I forget now all of the stuff that I used to read in the contract. But I forgot now. But that's all I wanted to say.
There's evaluations.
Yeah, there's the evaluations, but there's something else that administrators can do. You know it. I know you know it. I'm not helping you right now to remember it. But anyhow, that's all I can say for that. So I'll leave it to that.
I very much agree with what you're saying. And I think that really, if anybody could, if we can just digest that one lesson, we would make a lot of progress. And I will say that while I think we're all, a lot of us are new to this notion of putting ourselves forward as political people. We've left that to Democrats and Republicans, but workers are going to have to get more comfortable with putting themselves forward as political people, but not capitalist politicians, as working class politicians, people who are trying to fight for ideas within the class. And as we get more comfortable with that, I think people will become more comfortable putting forward their own ideas. Ideas I might not even agree with, but they will put them forward more passionately and more in a way that sounds more like them. I think we're at the beginning of the process here at Mission.
I'll just give an anecdote. Sorry, where sorry, this is quickly. I was written up by a principal because I was telling parents that they could have their children opt out of standardized testing. And we were instruments. You're as a teacher or a parent, educator, you are an instrument, part of this larger institution, SFUSD. You're a worker, part of the government. You're not supposed to be telling parents or guardians that, you know, this, you're supposed to administrate these sort of standardized testing. And here I was seeing the children struggling. And then I started just talking to parents and families after school. And then they saw a pattern why a large percentage of students were not taking the test.
And you were this common point.
They realized that was like, what are you doing?
No, but we get it, a lot of for misbehaving and also giving people options and talking about it.
Or when I had to sort of evaluate children if they were doing well, sometimes I would say, what is the kinder teacher? What is up or what's down? And then they would go under the desk or something. Oh, they know what's up. They know what's down. And, you know, but they didn't, you know, articulate it through words. And so they stopped letting me proctor. Thank you. Proctor these tests anymore. All right. Is that a good place?
And the election will be done on Thursday. So by our next episode, I can at least report what went down, but I think we should, you know, move on to something else.
You're probably going to be busier because you're going to win, and yes. So more shows.
if I hope to be on the UBC. I do hope I'm able to be on the UBC. I don't expect to be a building representative this year. If I am, I'll be like, ooh, okay, interesting, but I just don't see it. It wouldn't make sense given the Biden, Trump, all that stuff, but we'll see.
We hope that you share with us your results.
I will, definitely.
All right. That does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast / channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes, wherever you found this episode, or on our blog at what-s-left.webno.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast / channel there and connect with us. I remind folks that if you like anything that you've heard here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, and subscribe to any of our 6 platforms on Spotify, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog, which Andy will most likely be answering. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host Andy Lipson and Kenny Cepeda. Wear a mask, be safe, and vote.
In the union elections.
In the union elections.
All right. Yeah.